This podcast is brought to you by Recontract, the leading software to automate your reconditioning process and streamline your entire used vehicle management process. Visit recontract.com to learn more. That's recontract.com.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to Daily Drive for Monday, March 18th, 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, the UAW says a union election at VW's Tennessee plant is imminent. More signs of bankruptcy for Fisker, and Donald Trump threatens 100% tariffs on Chinese cars made in Mexico. Plus, we'll hear from the Department of Energy's Chelsea Sexton about the agency's loan programs office and its renewed focus on shaping the future of transportation.
This is really the first overhaul it's had in quite some time, which is a very cool opportunity for our team as well to help shape it in ways that are really productive for these transportation systems.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
The UAW says workers at Volkswagen's Chattanooga assembly plant in Tennessee are seeking an election to unionize. The union says a supermajority of eligible workers at the VW plant have signed union cards in about 3 months. The workers have filed a petition with the National Labor Relations Board seeking a vote to join the union. Stephen Sylvia is a professor at American University and wrote the book The UAW's Southern Gamble, Organizing Workers at Foreign-Owned Vehicle Plants. He says the move could ramp up political opposition to the organizing effort, which has been relatively quiet so far.
You know, the question is whether the Tennessee political establishment has learned that they're most effective if they wait until there's an actual recognition election. We may see the governor return to the plant. We may see some more political activity. In fact, I would anticipate that we will.
This would be the third time in 10 years that the UAW has sought to represent VW Chattanooga workers. The move sets up a critical test for UAW President Sean Fain's unprecedented campaign to expand the union's reach to foreign-owned automakers in the U.S.
Fisker is pausing production for the next 6 weeks. The troubled electric vehicle maker is looking to rein in inventory and avoid possibly having to file for bankruptcy. According to a regulatory filing, the company didn't make a required interest payment of about $8.4 million last week on its unsecured convertible notes due in 2026. Fisker warned it may not be able to meet obligations to service its debt and, quote, could need to seek protection under applicable bankruptcy laws. Fisker also says it plans to raise up to $150 million through a financing deal reached with the holder of its 2025 dated convertible notes. It didn't identify the existing investor and said the funding will be organized in 4 installments.
Donald Trump says he would hit cars made in Mexico by Chinese companies with a 100% tariff. That's double the levy he's previously said he would put on automobiles made south of the U.S. border. The former president and the GOP's presumptive presidential nominee addressed Chinese President Xi Jinping directly during a rally speech in Dayton, Ohio on Saturday when threatening the tariffs.
If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars if I get elected.
Chinese electric vehicle maker BYD is looking for an assembly plant location in Mexico. It said last month that it is not planning to use the operation to export vehicles to the U.S.
And car rental giant Hertz is replacing its CEO with the former COO of General Motors Cruise Robotaxi Unit. Stephen Scheer ran Hertz for just over 2 years after 3 decades at Goldman Sachs Group. The company says he has decided to step down. His departure follows Scheer's disastrous bet on electric vehicles that the company began unwinding in recent months. Hertz will replace him with Gil West, the former COO of Cruise. He departed the robotaxi company in December amid an investigation into an October 2nd self-driving crash in San Francisco. Hertz says West will also join its board of directors April 1st. And those are today's headlines. Jamie, the UAW says workers at the VW plant in Chattanooga is ready for an election to unionize. This plant has been close to unionizing in the past. How big of a win will this be for the UAW?
It would be huge. I mean, even if they're like favored to win, it would be huge because they have never won an election to organize workers at a non-union plant in the U.S. I mean, not since they first organized the big three, I guess the big four, when American Motors was still a thing. But none of these foreign-owned trans plants have ever been organized. It's not easy, and they have a chance. And if they do it, it'll be a breakthrough. Will it lead to a wave across the South? Maybe not, but they can't start winning a bunch of them if they don't win one.
And there's been a few times they've almost unionized this plant. What has stopped them in the past?
Yeah, the last time in 2019 was really close and unfortunate timing for the local organizers that their campaign was basically at the same time that the UAW scandal was unfolding. So every week or month, you'd get another story about another official who was, you know, spending tens of thousands of dollars on personal vacations to Palm Springs or funneling money from the union coffers into businesses owned by family members, often like buying, you know, large numbers of, you know, swag that they never bothered to even give out to the members. It was just one thing after another of negative headlines. So, you know, in a close race, that's going to push a few people to say, I don't need to give those guys my money.
Gotcha. Coming up, the Department of Energy is using its loan program office to help support and advance electrification in the auto industry. We'll hear from the DOE's Chelsea Sexton next on Daily Drive.
Tesla is no longer a luxury brand. At least that's what we've decided here at Automotive News, but we want to hear from you.
What do you think of our decision to no longer classify Tesla as luxury in our coverage? Send us a voicemail, text, or email. You might hear your comment on this week's Weekend Drive episode. Here's how to get in touch.
Call us and leave a voicemail or text us at 313-444-2774. Again, that's 313-444-2774. You can also record your voice on your smartphone and send it to dailydrive@autonews.com. That's dailydrive, one word, at autonews.com.
And tune into our Weekend Drive episode this weekend, available Saturday morning.
Managing your used inventory is not exclusive to one person or one part of the dealership. What does the communication look like between sales and service? Are your vehicles getting passed from trade-in to recon with no hiccups? What is your average cycle time to get a used car frontline ready? There is a lot to keep track of all at once. Right now, you could be experiencing three major issues with your recon information causing process breakdowns. One, lack of visibility into recon pricing to inform the appraisal process. Two, no access to that appraisal information when working through recon approvals. Three, missed information and process bottlenecks trying to manage a vehicle across multiple systems and tools. Full insight throughout your entire process is crucial to making your used car department the most efficient and profitable it can be. Recontract combined with AutoVision creates an end-to-end tool for your used car department to address these breakdowns. With access to live appraisal information and reconditioning approvals, you get a single view of every vehicle with all the data you need right in one place. Make more educated decisions on your used car inventory faster with all your data easily accessible at any stage. Visit info.recontract.com/autovision for more information. That's info.recontract.com/autovision. VISION.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. Over the weekend, we talked about a new mine in northern Nevada that plans to tap what's estimated to be the largest deposit of lithium on Earth. The Thacker Pass mine just landed a $2.2 billion federal loan to help finance its construction of a lithium carbonate processing plant. The loan came from the Department of Energy's Loan Program Office. Chelsea Sexton is a program officer with the unit. She spoke with our own Pete Bigelow on Shift, a podcast about mobility, before the Thacker Pass news broke. They talk about the office's broader efforts to help reshape American transportation. Here's a piece of their conversation.
You know, we talk so much about EV policy at this 30,000-foot level, and I feel like what the Loans Program Office does is really implement the policy, make the sausage, and you really have an inside look at how that all happened. So give us an overview. How much money does LPO have loaned out overall? How many loans are in the portfolio? What's the snapshot look here in March 2024?
Well, I'd say in the last few years for transportation, we've been sitting around $20 billion. We also have a few loans in the clean energy space as well. And then in terms of remaining loan authority, you know, depending on how we allocate it, over $200 billion and probably 40 to 50 in the transportation space. So for somebody like me that's gone from like trying to put one EV on the road at a time, it's a very different world to sort of be like, well, our smallest loans are $100 million. But our smallest loans are around $100 million. And our largest one so far is $9.2 billion. So we have a really wide range of comfort. In the transportation space, we've done a lot of battery supply chain. Certainly the vast majority of the interest from the industry and what's coming to us is supply chain components and materials more than vehicles per se. But we're also expanding from light duty for the last 15 years to medium heavy duty, which we started implementing in 2022. And we're adding aircraft, maritime, and rail, hopefully this year. So the program is getting much broader in its efforts, but we're still seeing a lot of interest in that component space because everyone needs batteries. Everyone's going to need lithium and graphite and wiring harnesses and silicon carbide chips for microchips or wafers for chips. So that's been where a lot of the interest is, but we also see a lot of gaps. So we don't see as much activity in, say, separators or electrolytes and things like that. So we'll go chase and call up those companies and say, hi, we're here. Can we help? So it's a lot of incoming, but also outgoing.
It does not surprise me that you mentioned graphite and lithium and some of those kind of key materials. But I think if I heard you right, you just said wiring harnesses. That seems maybe a little bit anomalous. Tell me about that one.
It does. Yeah. I mean, CellLink is one of the loans we announced last year. And I mean, it is sort of, it's very nerdy. It's a wiring harness. It's actually the only company that makes them in the US. And it's a very automated, more efficient process to make them. And so, you know, it doesn't sound like it's this, you know, really required thing on the surface. But we also watched multiple automotive plants shut down, say, after the Ukraine war, because they couldn't get wiring harnesses based on where they were made in the world. So, you know, that supply chain aspect we talked about and standing up really good, strong, robust domestic supply chains includes things like that. It's a more efficient product. It actually adds range to the car because it's lighter weight and more efficient than the traditional version. But it's also a security aspect of having a local supply chain.
How much of your posture is about reshoring right now, be it wiring harnesses or some of the other critical materials that you mentioned before?
I would say it's a priority across the board. Obviously, you know, the IRA and contains tax credits like 30D, which, you know, EV tax credits for consumers that require domestic content. So certainly there's been the interest from that standpoint, and automakers, battery companies, everybody wants that domestic supply chain because they want access to those incentives. But even before that, there has been this push to try to localize supply chains and set up, you know, redundant versions in different regions, Europe, US, Asia, whatever, so that we're doing less sort of shipping globally of things that can be established more locally.
You mentioned this a little bit before, but how have the Biden administration's two landmark bills, the IIJA and Inflation Reduction Act, how has that impacted the Loans Program Office or changed the scope in some way of what you're doing. And I know you hit on that last part a little bit, but how dramatically different is this now?
Sure. I mean, in my world, the Advanced Technology Vehicle Manufacturing Program was very much expanded by the infrastructure bill, which basically said, go play with trucks, locomotives, maritime, rail, that kind of aircraft, all of those things, but on the condition of new appropriations, which came through the IRA. So the combination of those two pieces of policy is what actually formally expanded my particular program, but it also gave more loan authority to the entire office. And we've been standing up carbon reduction programs and things like that. So there's a variety of changes that have come through those two bills, but especially broadening the transportation space is probably the one that is most notable for your particular audience.
Well, it would seem that I'm a little surprised that there wasn't already the medium and heavy duty vehicle aspect, right? Like that seems that would be the low hanging fruit.
You would think so, yeah. But the program was written in the late 2000s. Like it didn't contemplate most of what we're talking about today. So this is really the first overhaul it's had in quite some time, which is a very cool opportunity for our team as well to help shape it in ways that are really productive for these transportation systems. The infrastructure bill also offered one-word categories. So when it says like aircraft, I have everything from drones to spaceships going, we're in. So defining that a little more clearly is the piece we're working on this year.
So drones to spaceships, I would imagine on the maritime thing, there's similar, like there's personal watercraft versus, big multi-ton tankers. What's within the like swim lane that you're interested in, or are you interested in figuring out like what's on those outliers?
I mean, that is what we're working through as like almost as we speak is, you know, the center of the swim lane is pretty obvious, but how do you draw the edges in a way that allows the program continue to grow and doesn't rule out something that might be amazing in a couple years, but maybe as early today, but also, you know, contemplates what the bright, shiny objects are that maybe is not where we should be spending quite as much time.
You mentioned this before, but given this new broader scope, what sort of applications are you seeing more of? And is there others that, you know, specifically that you want to see more of that you're not quite, that maybe is too early right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the expansion, you know, it is medium heavy duty. So we're getting more trucks and buses and sort of the obvious things. I would say still that component over vehicle dynamic has persisted, in part because those working on the vehicles want to ensure they can get the components. And there is a little bit of that chicken eggy kind of thing going on. And then certainly we hadn't seen as much interest, say, with hydrogen in light duty. But there's more interest for medium heavy duty. So there's some of those types of patterns as well. I mean, in terms of what we want to see, like, I want to see all of it. We joke about, you know, occasionally, you know, are we ever going to get to the point of like, oh no, not another gigafactory, not another lithium plant. Like, wouldn't that be a nice problem to have? but certainly, if you look at the 10 loans we've announced in ATVM and transportation, it is multiple gigafactories, a lithium project, a graphite project, this wiring harnesses, the silicon carbide wafers. So, you know, the everything else, more efficient power electronics, other propulsion components, motors and things like that. Like we'd love to see a lot more of those gaps that we're not yet seeing quite as much of.
So you're still in a position of I don't want to say you'll fund anything under the sun, but you at least want to see the applications and that will help you draw those swim lanes that we talked about.
Yeah, I mean, we'd love to at least talk to folks. I mean, that's an interesting component that's been added to our office in the last few years is what we call our outreach and business development team. It's 50 people that spend all day, every day, just talking to folks about their projects with no cost, no obligation, just like, here's what we do. What are you doing? Does it fit? To help people kind of think through whether it makes sense to try to apply to our office. And then for those that do, you know, we're very different than a grant program where you sort of, you know, if there's an open funding opportunity, you write an application, you toss it over the wall, it's kind of a black box and you wait to hear something. We're very conversational and iterative. So we will look at your draft application. We will give you very robust and candid feedback. We will tell you if we think you're not quite ready or this section looks great, but more detail there. And especially as we see a lot of applications and certain trends start to identify themselves, we see almost all of the financial models are not robust enough. So we will encourage you to put more detail in that from the very beginning, especially in the manufacturing projects. Everyone tells us tons about what they're making, but not enough about how they're making it. And at the end of the day, it's the how, the facility, that we're financing. So those types of things we also help coach people through so that they have the highest chance of success of actually getting the loan they're seeking.
Chelsea Sexton is Program Officer with the Department of Energy's Loan Program Office. You can hear her full conversation with Pete Bigelow on Shift, a podcast about mobility, wherever you get your podcasts. That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News Coordinating Producer Jake Neer, as well as our own Michael Martinez for his reporting for today's podcast. You can get the latest news on federal transportation loans, UAW organizing efforts, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back tomorrow for my conversation with Boston Consulting Group's Brian Colley about how automakers can find the next wave of EV adopters. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.